So I was just hanging out with my friend Chris, who never been on a ham radio.
No, I have not.
I guess that's just because when I was doing them here, I was living across the river at Dan's place. And I don't know, did you ever make it over there? Not really, right?
Yeah, I did once. And it
was pretty nice, right?
Yeah, see, that's the thing was that it was the atmosphere of your friend Dan, like just basically living and not cleaning. And was it a... But no, I was there a couple times.
Yeah, see, it's because he's my cousin, so it's like exactly like a... What's that Trainspotting thing? Of like, hey, but they're your mates, so what can you do?
Yeah,
it's pretty much. It's worse just, when they're your family. You can't do shit. You just gotta... See, that's the thing is like...
But you can choose your friends. You just can't choose family, yeah.
And I never had anything against Dan, but it's not coincidence that that's when I was doing all the early shows with Matt and Ray that I just never asked Dan to be on one. He's just playing WoW, not, you know, so whatever.
Yeah. If you could ask him, like, now, how do you really dominate when you're playing the original Quake game? Well, see, what you have to do is, yeah, you could ask him that.
He fucking did, though. Actually, that's a very good example of how he never really could get his shit together. He went to this graphic design school, my cousin Dan.
Yeah.
Spent a bunch of money, but it was Quake school. All he did is play fucking Quake. Yeah, but he's so good at Quake.
Yeah, but did you see him rocket jump back in the day? Like that...
He honestly could. It felt so good when I killed him, because it'd be like, he'd kill me 100 times, no kidding. I'd kill him once. But he'd do shit where, like, because Quake had these crazy bounce physics.
Oh, yeah, yeah, like, just, yeah, like, you could just sometimes fall, like, jumping on a grenade and stuff like that.
Yeah, you
could
just literally go flying. So, like, he would rocket, he'd hit me with a rocket. I'd go flying across the room. He would swivel and know exactly where I was going to be, hit me with another rocket, and I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, just it's literally just walks around you like a pole and stuff like that. And it was kind of gratifying that literally you catch him on his mistakes, which were rare, and, like... He catch you on your best moment, and you like, I think that was the reason why he.
Oh, you know, I'll tell you another thing that kind of bugged me about Dan. When I'm playing a game like that, and I'm way better than the other person, I don't mind handicapping myself to make it more fun or even.
Oh yeah.
None of that from Dan.
Yeah.
He's like, you should just. You'll never get better unless I kill you 3,000 times.
If I'm not working for that, I'm always working for that angle. Or what's that line from Rounders? Yeah, he's always kind of going looking for the angle or something like that. And yeah, I can't. He literally can't tone it down.
No, he can't. Exactly. He's exactly like Ed Norton. He just takes every fucking opportunity, every advantage. I remember for my birthday one year, he borrowed a Super Nintendo back when Street Fighter 2 first came out.
Oh, yeah.
And he was also wicked good at Street Fighter 2. So good. These days, I'm probably about as good as him. But back then, you know, I was just a kid. Yeah. And I used to have a real bad temper about video games. And I was getting a little older. It was starting to go away. But it was still there. And after he beat me like 30 times in a row...
It's like maybe on the 29th time.
But I remember starting to really get pissed, but I was like, I can't get mad. It's not even my house. And, you know, and he's like, hey,
wasn't it your birthday?
Yeah, but that's what he said. He's like, hey, calm down, man. I got this for your birthday. And I was like, just like fighting back tears of anger. And I'm like, I know. I appreciate it. I got to take a break. I'm just so mad.
Remember, like, our early days at your mom's office with those, which would kind of was basically the forerunners to the StarCraft days of
Network computers.
Yeah, Warcraft 2.
And we only had two computers.
Yeah, two computers, but those, like hooking up two computers, that was pretty much to us. That's like the first email. Like, you know,
it really was like insane bullshit. Like we had I can't even remember what the cable was called anymore. Null cable or something?
Yeah, it's not what we call it now. Was it a?
And then you had to like dial like it was a modem, both at the same time, like timing to like connect.
And one mouse sucked a little bit more than the other one. And we would eventually see like, you know what, that is kind of almost one arm behind the back. And
I do remember that other game we played a lot, Populous 2. Did you play that one much?
I think a bit. I remember Jay Lemon used to play that a bit more.
And Dave Rubeck and guys. But man, what was my favorite thing with that? Because it was just like, you were like a god and you got your people.
The more people you had, the more stuff you could do.
Right. And you could put like a plague on one of his guys.
Oh, yeah. And you could sneak it in.
And then it would slowly spread. And it wouldn't actually kill his people. But when they had the plague, you didn't get any bonus. It's like they weren't there. So I remember my favorite was Dave Rubeck was over in my side of the world fucking shit up and shooting lightning at my people and stuff. And I slipped a plague over at his side. And he didn't pay attention for like way too long, like 4 or 5 minutes. Then he goes back. Everyone has the plague. And he's just like, what the fuck? And I really think that's one thing that's different, where online games are real popular now, but being in the same room was fucking sweet.
Oh, yeah, just like we can just make... I remember I would say the second volume of our StarCraft days, where like we had the five over at your old place, but then when you moved in with Dave and Cody, there was like the four, and they sort of weren't facing away from each other, but they were sort of in a corner, and it was me, Corey Carr, and you and Matt. And like we had to say something to each other, like to coordinate the stuff. And he was like, hey, we're hitting Keith in like 2 minutes. Get ready. And I'm like, okay. And like you guys could clearly tell communications were happening. And you were like whisper. And it was then trying to psych out, just trying to use like signals that like, all right, and just like go and whatnot. And
man, though, do you remember when we had all the computers set up at my mom's
house? Oh yeah.
And then there was the one computer on the third floor.
Oh yeah. And like we even immediately were like, well, what are we going to do for crises? All right, hit this on the phone.
Yeah, so it was like if you just send the message P, that means pick up the phone. And since we were all in the same house, you didn't have to dial.
I was on the third, and it was tricky because we're like, all right, everyone knows the map we're going to have to do. Like you'd have to sort of send a runner. And then we'd be playing, and of course, it'd be us versus computers. And then I see this basically this line of brown, and it was basically like Woodstock for Hydralisks, just going all the way up. And I immediately hit P, and I'm like, oh man, I gotta call this in. And I pick up the phone, and I hear Matt going, yes, we know, we're dealing with it. And he just hangs up. Like, valuable seconds are being wasted just kind of discussing the problem, and then I just try to hold out and whatnot.
I'm just thinking, there's going to be people listening to this that don't understand anything we're talking about, but there's going to be people that are going to be like, yes, like, I remember those days.
Yeah, you mean like Matt and my brother? Just like,
yeah, like, we went through like 3 or 4 separate total StarCraft revivals. Like, we hadn't played it in 2 years.
And then it was like,
let's go find StarCraft in digital world. Desperate choice to try to build. Keeps you alive with stomach filled. Always stay on the defense. Always keep yourself a little tense. And with constant effort, always think or close your eyes, fall back and sink into the cocoon. Into the cocoon.
We're actually a bunch of friends of mine. Oh, we're just a friend, my friend Pat and I. We're like, hey, remember Diablo? Where basically when Diablo 3 came out, he's like, you had to
there
play
was a Diablo 3.
Well, no, that's no, it's coming out.
Oh, okay.
And like they just advertised that like Blizzard has a website, and basically for us Diablo guys, we're like, holy shit! And the only thing you can do without like just you know waiting out kind of like waiting a line for the game because that game's not going to come out for 2 years, is that I got to start playing Diablo 2. Just even though like it,
you, I heard you, a lot of people still play.
Oh Diablo yeah, 2. And then we. Two of us started playing. We're like, I was good, but we kind of like, you know, it's like the StarCraft. Like, yeah, there's only three teams, and I've gotten really good at Sea Shanks. And then, like, we mentioned it to our friends, and just last night, I was at a seven man, and getting all those computers are like, do you see me? No, I do not see your network. It's like, it's the shitty game of getting those computers connected on somebody's wireless router or something like that. And then we're all playing. And the worst is, we can't all fit in the same room, so two guys meet in another room. And they'll be not listening to the plan. It'll be a buy off themselves and just yelling at them. Like when you kill a big boss, gear gets dropped. And it really is. You can tell even like guys that really hang out and like each other. They will not listen to things like, listen, guys, and it all drops. Everyone just be like, we're just going to discuss who gets what. But no, someone will go, he goes up, like he'll get it all. And then he's like, hey, what was in that? Well, I sold most of it. And he's just like,
it's awesome though that like Blizzard games still hold up.
Oh yeah, I
was thinking it'd be funny when StarCraft 2 comes out. What if it's not that fun and everyone just keeps playing StarCraft 1 forever?
Yeah, was it
100 years?
I've actually been watching. They have two really good videos on the StarCraft website, and it's basically two of the guys who've been developing the game, and they basically play a two-man versus game. And the best part is they have two people who also work for Blizzard, and they're basically announcers. And it, like, you get to the edge of the seat because, like, it really goes back and forth because, and these guys are doing stuff with units. And just the way they're moving them and stuff, they're like, man, it's just, like, whole other game. Or just, like,
man,
you could never.
I watch that. That
oh, yeah.
Really
the,
cool.
And, like, the announcers really make it way more interesting, especially if you already love StarCraft. Like, oh, the Tyrant player, he's, like, slowing his tech. That's really going to cost him. And, like, it just.
It's kind of like when you see wrestling live and there's no announcers. It's, like, not really the same.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're pretty much. Yeah, and we're, like, though these guys are, like, you know, they won't be using credits. Like, oh, he's just dominating with the Zealots in the Tyrant's base. Like, he'll be using, they'll just be using kind of neat things. And also, like, the game isn't out yet, so you'll see units that they're using that they haven't put up on the website yet. They're like, hey, what's that flying thing there? And just and like you're trying to figure it out, and you're kind of like, they're calling it a Nighthawk, and hopefully that'll be in the next game. But no, they've only got two, but they're kind of entertaining almost in a sport. You can see why Korea has like
say,
the...
do you remember like how it was always like when you play online,
oh,
people
yeah.
would put on their map name, no Koreans?
Yeah.
You know, but so I had this guy named Manu that I knew in Vancouver who was from Korea, and right. I was talking to him on email a little while ago, and I was like, hey, you know, I don't want it to sound stereotypical, but StarCraft 2, right? And he's like, fucking right! I was so excited.
You're like, yeah, I hope you're almost hoping, like, you're not all the same over there, but I want to stereotype. And he's just like, he's got the Blizzard shirt. And
yeah,
just, yeah,
well, apparently they did the first announcement of,
yeah,
was
they
in
did.
Korea.
Yeah,
they didn't even do it in America.
Yeah, it was, yeah, like I saw like kind of like on YouTube, there's like screenshots and just crowd going nuts and just, yeah, was it
I'm just imagining like, you got like, a million Korean guys in front of like a stage, and a guy just comes out and just says StarCraft 2, walks away and just fires, and like the whole place just
yeah.
goes insane.
They just even have like the StarCraft 2 logo and just the two slits. That's all I have to say for just like the bedlam of the kind of going across and whatnot. And yeah, was it, I wonder how much of those like the guys who play StarCraft make. But imagine it's so, and I hear like they have announcers, and like there's one announcer who used to be a player. And he is a huge Protoss guy. And it sounds like these actual players. I read on Wikipedia one time, there are certain guys who favor certain teams. Like, they're just like, I'm a Tyrant guy. And they don't kind of, they're not always switching it up. And, like, guys who used to be, like, good on Protoss, they will really criticize other Protoss players. And he's just like, well, this guy just doesn't know how to use all-powerful Protoss. They're just like, you know...
Everyone on IR is hanging their head in shame.
Yeah. That would be awesome. We'll be right back.
Man, you know what I also just makes me remember? Do you remember when your brother would play online? And your brother Mark, if anyone listens to Ham Radio, he was the guy who visited me in Vancouver when I got bear sprayed in the face, just to connect things.
So people know what I'm talking about.
And he would play online like a 2-on-2, so he's like supposed to be somebody's teammate. And he would name himself Backstabber number one.
Yeah, number one, I think with an exclamation point. Yeah, was it, and he would go and start like building a bunker in his teammate's base, or just move troops and even kind of discuss like, hey, let's hit that Zerg base. And then he would take off allies and his units would just start opening up.
So and he's just shooting the shit out of his own partner.
Yeah, yeah. He'd almost quite obviously target like SEVs and stuff, like really destroy the guy's economy.
And there was no voice chat back then, so it was all you had to type.
Yeah,
stuff.
It's like, hey, turn on your allies. And Mark would be like, what? And it's like
long pauses too. Yeah, yeah. The guy'd be like, allies, you got your allies turned off. You're shooting me. He's like, where's that? So the guy would be like, click here. Da 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 da. I'm not seeing it.
And again, like just, and sometimes he wouldn't do it right at the start too. It'd just be like, hey, what are you going? And the teammate would be like, I'm going carriers. Well, I'm going nukes. And then just like, he would turn it off and then the nukes would start flying and that is way obvious because nukes don't just start going off. You have to target them. And I thought that was one of the funnier parts of just how would we recognize people's games on Battle.net. Would be all these different names, and like Headhunters was popular, and we would come up with like No Fat Chicks was like, you know, out there's your I see your game. I thought Star Wars sucked back just when like Phantom Menace was coming out. You would get players on there like, what are you talking about? Like, they wouldn't even be there to play.
Do you remember Kenneth would always name himself like Disco Donkey?
Disco Donkey. Yeah, he's got a bunch now. Disco Donkey. Actually, Jenkins had Famous Ape. Capricious Crocodile.
I think it all started with Rich Uncle Skeleton.
Yeah, Rich Uncle. Yeah, it was Rich Uncle Skeleton. I thought one of my favorite names for a map or like for a game was There Ain't No Air in Space. And I knew it was kind of like this tier in space lab. But yeah, like StarCraft was. It just kind of. He was just good. Like it was so well balanced too. Like that was a big thing. Like when it's number two coming out. Hey, you're gonna have another team, but like, what are you gonna do?
Is there a fourth one, or is it just the three?
They've kind of made hints, like, but it is just gonna be the three. Like, there's probably gonna be like some stuff you're gonna fight in like the campaigns.
It's cool too how they're gonna release it like as three games.
Yeah, and a lot of people have said if it was any other company. And maybe almost very few other franchises could literally get away with that without much criticism. Even they're still getting criticized. I'm like, well, listen, you guys are making enough from WoW. Is it really a money thing? Like, do you really?
I think it's more just to roll them out, give like, you know, yeah, more time to develop.
Like, and also, yeah, people are like, hey, we love the games, but they take so long to come out. And then they're like, well, how about we'll give you the game and just one campaign, and then just give us time to do the other campaign. Because a lot of us, all we really want to do is play with our friends and just like,
yeah. And I really think Blizzard is beyond all criticism. I mean, as much as the World of Warcraft phenomenon,
yeah,
frightens and scares me,
and like, yeah. I love Blizzard games, but and I've tried WoW, and
but that's not Blizzard's fault. They make quality games.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah, and it's good, but I couldn't get into it. But I love Diablo, and some people like, just I don't like this click all this stuff, and just I don't know, Diablo's fun, but yeah, like, just also, WoW, everything's so big. Like, sometimes you see the shoulder pads and just the weapons, and just they've kind of taken the art style this way, just super colorful, and just everything's crazy big and whatnot.
So this is jumping tracks a bit, but I was just listening to a video game podcast last night. And
I got to listen to some of these podcasts, because you always mention these kind of video game podcasts.
Well, a lot of it's weird because I'm not that into games anymore, but there's these couple of people, these personalities that are really good. There's this guy, Anthony Gallegos, who's just hilarious. So anytime he's on a thing, I listen to him. Oh, one, though, I'll show you later. And this is a good plug, because I should plug this on my show, because I love it so much. There's this guy named Robert Ashley, who I also first found out about just because whenever he'd be on, he was more funny, more interesting. He does this show called A Life Well Wasted that only comes out once a month because he puts tons of work into it. And it's like a This American Life sort of thing where he interviews different people, puts in music. So there's only three episodes, and it's fucking awesome. AlifeWellWasted.com. The guy, so great. Just like aces 10. The way my podcast...
9 thumbs up?
Yeah, exactly. The way my podcast, the whole point is to kind of be shitty and whatever. His is the exact opposite. His is like super well produced. I want to try making a show like that sometime.
Yeah, it sounds like he has a good topic, this, hey, video game culture. And he's kind of, so he's got a broad palette, but he can just really focus in on like
and
MMOs
stuff,
and stuff like that.
And like his first episode, do you remember Electronic Gaming Monthly, the magazine?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
EGM?
It came up for a long time.
So it closed down like 6 months ago, and his first episode was about that. So it'll start with like Electronic Gaming Monthly. Even the name sounds archaic. And you know, just like, you know, it's like a real show, but it's just about video games.
Was it, actually, I saw there was like at that kind of magazine rack where I get groceries, I saw Nintendo Power 20 years and whatnot, or it's like that. And I was like, I've never bought a Nintendo Power in my life, but I was like, you know, that would be one that kind of. And I flipped through it and it was like, oh, the one where the first Star Fox game came out. I'm like, yeah, that was a pretty big deal. And oh, just tons of neat. It was kind of neat to sort of. And they were pretty good at like Nintendo Power. I remember hearing like they were very one-sided. Oh no, this new Mega Man game is probably be the best Mega Man game ever. You know, just
the one that pissed me off, because usually like it would focus a lot on Nintendo games, and Nintendo games are always super good.
Yeah.
But there was this fucking game called Wrath of the Black Manta that definitely the company paid Nintendo a shit ton of money to promote that game because it sucked, and it was always in Nintendo. I think it was on the cover once. And it's like, Nintendo Power, what the fuck? Like, usually they'll focus on Castlevania or, like, games that are actually good.
Oh, yeah, or that, like, are really kind of, like, Castlevania super popular, too. So, like, you know, just like, hey, you know, let's do another Castlevania game. Like, people love them. Yeah, was it a...
But they fucked me good on Wrath of the Black Manta. That game was horrible. It was terrible. I had to take this long ride on the 7 train, like a 40-minute ride in New York, and I didn't have anything to listen to and no books or anything. And I saw an EGM at like the little kiosk at the subway station.
Yeah.
Almost bought it for the ride home, but I was like, I don't want to spend $6 on just a magazine.
Yeah.
And then EGM went out of business. I was like, oh, I should have bought that when I could have.
I felt guys were $6 short of keeping this thing alive.
It's kind
of
like I should have visited my grandma before she died. You know? Like, I should have bought that magazine.
Well, I have to say, I see a difference between your grandmother and
a
magazine game.
I talked to my 99-year-old grandmother yesterday. And
really?
She's
99?
99 fucking years old.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, and she's still pretty together. I talked to her for like 5 minutes. Everything seemed coherent, made sense to me. Yeah. I was impressed.
Did you ask her, so was it like the turn of the century, like year 2000? She's like, what a stinko 1,000 years that was.
She's like, PlayStation 3, that's bullshit. It's like all these opinions about current things. Oh, yeah, so what I was going to say, in the talking about your brother's backstabbing ways made me think of this, or people stealing shit in Diablo, is I guess they've been trying to make games before where, like, there's a lot of these Call of Duty type games, you know, like army fighting.
My brother and I were big Call of Duty fans.
Well, there's this one that the guys that made SOCOM are working on. I think it's called Meg. It sounds super cool because, I'll get into the details after. But I guess people have been trying to make games where you have, like, a commanding officer, more like a real army thing. But whenever they, you know, like, here's the objective, you guys go do that, no one will do it. Because you play online, it's just a bunch of assholes. So the kind of the way they figured out how to fix it is that if you go do the actual objective, you get double experience for everything that happens.
Yeah.
So it's like you get half.
Oh yeah,
if you
like
just fuck around.
Yeah, my brother and I used to play a lot of like Call of Duty 2. Yeah, there's no like we'd always play team deathmatch instead of players, but no one would ever say anything. Though the one notable thing that was ever said, and my brother and I both agreed, was hilarious. When one of these small levels called Quarantine, any Call of Duty people, they're like, oh yeah, Quarantine. A lot of boys have their names written on that map.
And 88 Brave Souls.
Yeah. Went down last week. And that's a very grenade-heavy level. and there was a lot of us there, and it was really just in the shit. Like, you really had to, like, really had to focus just to stay alive for a good amount of time. And someone posted, "What the hell is this?" Because it is just ridiculous. Just people running around, grenades flying. And some person on the other team just put, "It's war, stupid."
This Meg game, this is what sounds cool to me. It's a 256-player game, which just sounds dumb, right?
Yeah, that
it's just
sounds...
going to be a clusterfuck of stupid
shit.
Oh,
yeah, you're going to always have too many people, or you're never going to have enough.
But how this one's set up, if this works, it's going to be fucking cool, is... You have little units of 8 people. That's like a squad. And each squad has like a commanding officer who I think is actually one of the players, but he's the one that directs minor things like, okay, go get this turret, go get that gun, go whatever.
Okay.
And then groups of 32 are like, I don't know, a platoon or whatever. I don't know the terms. But
yeah.
And then each of those 32 has a guy who is watching the whole map like it's a strategy game.
Oh, and he's going to report back to the commander?
So he can see everything, and he tells the guy who controls the 8, all of them, like, the bigger picture of what's going on.
And okay, that's kind of actually really... That does sound cool.
And then each 128 is the whole army on each side, and each army has one commanding officer who is seeing everything. So like, most people are just playing a first-person shooter, but some people are, like, platoon leaders, and some people are generals. So they're playing, like, a whole different game where they're seeing...
Oh yeah, like that'd be actually cool. Like yeah, for like the officers, their screen probably just be dots and flags and stuff like that. Yeah, visitor or something like that.
And then the way they're trying to hold it together is that when they give an objective, if you don't do the objective, you only get half score. So
or was it
that works?
Yeah, was it and that's kind of because it is just like, you know, listen, I don't have like, you know, who the fuck are you? You know, especially if the guy leading you doesn't know what he's doing.
Right.
But also, like, I think a lot of it will be is that if you give the players that have to achieve these objectives, if they can't look around too much, like, well, no, this seems like a dumb idea. Like, you sort of have to, and it will put into that whole thing, like, listen, though, the guys at the top, they've got a master strategy, and we got to do our part. Hopefully it's not a murder thing.
It could be cool, because, yeah, like, in real war, like, you got a bad general, get a lot of good men killed.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, yeah, it reminds me of StarCraft days of just... sending guys in, they're like, all right, we gotta like, you know, distract them for a bit. So Marines head out, and you're just like, oh, man.
And that really seems like a cool idea, where, like, if you're on this huge 256-player map, and you're just a grunt, but you just got to assume that the guy who can see everything knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And and you don't respawn right away. You actually have to parachute back in.
Oh, yeah. So there's some games that are kind of like that or whatnot, that you can sort of see stuff kind of happening.
I was wondering, though, when you're parachuting, can you get snipered out of the air while you're parachuting?
I don't think funny. Just like, because it really happened in like real life when guys were parachuting at times. From some of the like Call of Duty maps, not really, actually I think you parachuted in, but I got the impression that you saw parachutes once you've landed, but I got the impression that you couldn't really be seen as you were dropping by people, that they just kind of animated looking like there's planes flying over and stuff like that. And was it and it was kind of neat, because you did sort of kind of get an overview of the map. But things like games like that is stuff. And also, like, the thing like Call of Duty and whatnot, how you could never do in that is people are moving around all the time, even though they're not like quake jumping, or like how Halo you can even do a bit of like crazy maneuvers and stuff, is that the battlefield is changing, that even if you gave orders, they would just be, oh, they'd be redundant by the time you gave them, because stuff had changed already in the seconds that you were just kind of figuring out where stuff could go. So if the game was kind of paced where I'm a big time artist, I get a lot of calls.
Fat penis. So let's throw in a song officially, because we kind of talked about video games a lot. I remember, Chris, you telling me that you liked, maybe this has changed. This is like 2 years ago information, but since you do a lot of like work in your studio, that you're a big time artist.
Yeah.
That like longer songs or like sort of like techno type stuff is good sometimes, or things that'll kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I don't like all techno. Like, there's just like people who don't like techno. There's a lot of crap. But like, when I bought the best of Daft Punk, like when I have to get myself up, or like or actually and also like the best of Fatboy Slim is also pretty good. I'm just trying to think of.
Well, that's where I was thinking, like you were saying, like, ah, you know, my musical tastes are not gonna fit or whatever, but that's kind of what's cool, is just to hear like shit that I might never have heard, you know. That's kind of thing that's cool to do shows with other people.
Oh yeah. Was it I've got my iPod right here, so why don't we just put it out and just check. Was it there's one song that had some time to listen to, but it is long. It's actually 42 minutes by this band called
Holy Shit, really?
And it's not really like techno. It's just kind of got a lot of weird sound. Like, just, it's got a weird melody, and it sort of doesn't just loop, but it just kind of does the same thing.
I'm a little curious. I mean, maybe I won't play the whole thing. I'll just like play a segment or something, but holy shit, 42 minutes.
It's from the band Yakuza, and yeah, let's see. Yeah, no. Oh, I'm sorry. It's 43 minutes and 25 seconds. And the song is called 01000011111001. And it has nothing to do with, like, that sort of sounds like, oh, is it kind of like, I don't know, like a binary kind of song? Like, because that's sort of what it indicates. And it's not. Like, there's some, I'd almost compare it to, like, there's a bit of jazz music into it, and just weird, but. It's just this, like, off the top of my head, like, what's kind of a long song? And I immediately thought, that's the longest song I got on here. Like, just.
Do you realize in the olden days, like, of the record, that wouldn't fit on a fucking record? Like, that song would be too long to put on one side of an LP. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny because the rest of Yakuza.
Like, 30-second songs.
It's really these harsh kind of sounding. Somebody got it for me, like, as a gift. And it's like, hey, this might be all right. And some of them weren't too bad. And they're kind of like, they're a bit kind of heavy metal and whatnot, or just like, just very loud. Just was it a really kind of jonesed up, like, just jazz lyrics? Sometimes you can't even hear what the guy's saying. And then this song with this weird like code for a name, and it's like, what? It's almost like somebody like, hey, we got 43 minutes left, I'm gonna just sneak this in there. I don't know. I'm not saying it's a great song. It's just a different song.
Thank you. All right, let's keep the fucking nerdism up. I just went to the comic shop with Chris, the old comic store I used to work at, Strange Adventures. I was at the Halifax shop there the other day. But this is the Fredericton shop that I used to work at. And I got to see Derek, the manager. It's fun. You know, it's fun just to do the drop-in. Hey, I'm back in town. How you doing? Super shock. And the reason I went over there today, besides just to say hi, is I got a shit ton of comics. Like, I used to work at that comic store, and a big part of my pay was comic books. So I'd get just tons of stuff that I never really took care of. Like, for a little while I did that putting them in the bags and board shit, but I didn't keep up with it. Because what did I care? For one thing, that's comics are just supposed to be for fun. You're just supposed to roll them up in your back pocket, as the cliche goes, and, you know, just enjoy them. But that's hard to do when you're buying them, because these bitches are fucking expensive. But they weren't for me, they were free. So when I moved out to Vancouver, my dad sold off my comics to get me some cash. And I liked his method. He would take big boxes of them to the flea market and be like, a dollar, whatever they were, a dollar per comic. And then people would go through and buy whatever they thought was worth a dollar. Then he'd come back next week, 75 cents a comic. Then all the 75 centers would go, and then 50 cents, then a quarter, and then a dime, you know, until whatever was left, buy the whole box for $5. And he made me a few $100. It was nice. It was a nice little bonus chunk of change for when I moved out there. But I was under the impression that he sold off everything. He did not. I started looking through stuff, and holy fuck, man, I got a lot of comic books left. Just tons. And in some ways, it is a pretty sweet collection, because I was always, the reason I got hired at that store is because I was the indie comic guy. The main dude, Derek, he knew the superhero stuff. I don't know a dick about that, really. I know all the weird obscurities. So I really got some interesting shit in this collection. I got, like, Lethargic Lad, fucking... Let me go down the pile. Nowhere by Debbie Dreschler. I bet nobody knows what that comic is. Palookaville by Seth. Instant Piano. Like, I got some weird obscurities that are... Oh, True Swamp by John Lewis, I think his name was. That was a fucking cool comic. But, as cool as these things are, I just don't need them anymore. I'm just gonna try to get rid of them on eBay or something. Like, I'll just sell them in bulk as not appropriate for collectors. Probably not in good shape. Some of them might be a little wrinkled or watermarked or whatever. But I'm hoping somebody will grab them just to... I don't know, that just wants a shit ton of comics. Just to get them out of my mom's house, if nothing else, and maybe I'll make a little cash on them. But mostly, I'm not too worried about holding on to stuff, because you can get anything, man. Anything you want out there is so easy now. Just jump on eBay or Amazon or whatever, and whatever it was that you used to want that was so great, you can get it back if you really need it. So I kind of look at that as, you know, it might cost a little bit more, but that's like the holding fee. I kind of look at the whole world, the whole fucking North American global internet computer economy is like a giant storage place for my stuff, you know? Any stuff that I used to have, you know, oh, maybe you remember, like, oh, remember how fun that old Zelda game was on Game Boy? Wish I had held on to that for all these years. Fuck it, man, you can get it. You can just go get it. It's out there. Someone's got it. Someone will sell it to you, and it's not going to cost that much. Or it's just like, that's just the retrieval fee to retrieve these things from this enormous giant world that is just a big, big storage spot, as far as I'm concerned. I don't really see the point in collecting. But there are a few things that I'm going to hold on to that were just, like, way too cool. Like, The Jam by Bernie Moreau, the super cool color-injected Turbo Adventure from Hell, number one. I had two copies of that, I remember, because I loved it so much. 1987. It's just about this guy who lives in Montreal, and he kind of dresses up like a superhero, but just kind of for fun, just to jump across rooftops with his dog. And then he kind of inadvertently, accidentally sort of does help somebody one night, and then gets a pizza and him and his dog eat it. That's all, but it's just such a nice comic. I don't know, brings back fond memories. But I got some stuff like my Paul Pope comics I'm going to hold on to. He did all these comics in big, weird sizes. And even one of them, it's like, it's been out of print forever. The guy just does fucking Batman comics and shit now, but it was called The Ballad of Dr. Richardson, and I really miss that comic. Maybe it's still in here. There's a little bit of stuff I haven't gone through yet. That thing was fucking fantastic. What a brilliant comic. I should look that up, actually, see if the global worldwide net has got it out there somewhere for me to get, hopefully not too expensively. But the one that really surprised me was Joe Matt's Peep Show. Joe Matt is a guy who, he grew up in Philly, but for years he lived in Montreal and Toronto. And it was this weird thing in the like early 90s where he and a guy named Seth, real name is Greg Gallant, and Chester Brown, they were all doing autobiographical comics, and they all showed up in each other's comics. Not as much Chester Brown's, his were more about his childhood, but it was this really cool, weird thing. But I remember I was always, at the time, you know, when I was a teenager or whatever, I was more into these sort of fancy pants comics that were kind of too fucking fancy for their own good, you know? Not to say that that's the case with these comics, but it did make me lean more toward Chester Brown and Seth than Joe Matt. I always thought Joe Matt was funny, but I didn't really think his comics had the weight of the other two guys. Whereas now, it seems like more of a drag to read those other two guys' comics. They're way more introspective and way more still and quiet and thoughtful. Whereas Joe Matt's comics were always sort of the dark side of autobiography, about how he eats his scabs and how he fucking, or how he pisses in the sink because it feels more comfortable to him to stand up, you know? It's right, like, right at the right fucking height, so even if he lives in a place where he's sharing accommodations and other people need to use that bathroom, he still pisses in the sink. Like, it's amazing. But what's really amazing are the comics he was doing about his relationship with this girl named Trish. Holy balls, man. He did, like, a whole issue about how he was, like, lusting after one of Trish's friends behind her back and making all these plans to come see her at work so he could see this chick and fucking unbelievable, because she's obviously going to see that. And eventually she did, and then it leads to they fight about that in later issues, and eventually she breaks up with him. And it's like, well, it's, and obviously it's not all 100% true. He shifts things around and exaggerates and whatever to make it more of an entertaining narrative flow, but there are fundamental truths here. He was dating a girl named Trish. He did a comic about all these horrible thoughts that are going on in his head, and they broke up because of fucking shit like that, and fucking how what a mean prick he could be. And although she, fucking Christ, one of his big things in his comics is his addiction to pornography and how much time he spends just masturbating and stuff. And there's, like, this one comic that takes place in the really early 90s where he borrows a VCR from someone and rents a porn movie while she's gone. And she finds out because, like, the VCR was left on and, like, or whatever. No, I guess they had a VCR. Doesn't matter. The point is she flips out on him because he rented one porn movie while she was gone. And, like, oh, you'd rather jerk off to porn girls than to me and blah, blah, blah. Like, crazy shit. It wasn't all him, you know? Like, that's such a deal breaker. How do you fucking coexist with someone who won't let you watch porn at all? That is, like, that is feminism run wild, you know? That is just, like, totally misinterpreting the positive side of any of this fucking stuff. Like, just so way too far, way overboard. But at the end of the day, he is way more of a bastard. Like, there's a comic about how he got in a fight with her and fucking gave her a black eye, and he tries to shrug it off a bit, like, hey, well, we get in fights all the time, and she's always hitting me. She's hit me a dozen times, so I finally lost it and hit her once. So what? You know, he's like that type of guy. He, like, can't really apologize, can't honestly fucking admit that he fucked up till later when finally, you know, they've been broken up for 4 months, and he finally realizes, oh, man, I was such a piece of shit. Anyway, the point I'm trying to get to is, reading these now that I am 29 years old, the same age he was when he made them, it's incredible to me how much I'm enjoying these, like how good they really are, where I thought they were just kind of like fun voyeurism when I was a teenager. I can relate so much more now, and these just are so, they're fucking masterful, you know? I mean, the dude is insanely slow at production. He only did like, I don't know, 10 or 12 issues in, fuck, 20 years, you know? Like, he must be in his mid-40s by now. And he hasn't done much, you know? Like, that's what I went over to the comic store to do, is there's one more collection to catch me up. This one more thing, fucking, it's called Spent. 4 issues is all it is. And it took him forever to make this thing. It took him years. Like, I've been out of the loop forever, and that's all I need to catch up is this one book. Like, I don't even know how he survives. I have no idea what... He's notoriously thrifty. I think I learned a lot of my thriftiness from him, or just that you can live and pursue what you want to pursue without having to slave away your whole life at a shitty job, but I just don't know how, what he's living on after all these years. What is he up to? It's crazy. It's like, fuck. Hold on, let me see if I can find this one part from one of his comics. Okay, this is one of the mildly inspirational moments in one of them, from Peep Show number 5. But to set the scene a little, this is this girl named Mary. He's really only saying this stuff to try to get in her pants, basically, you know, or try to start some kind of relationship with her because she has been just sort of turning him down. But this is after he's stated over and over how he just loves exoticness. He loves Asian girls. And this chick is red-haired with freckles. And he ran into her on the street and couldn't remember her name. And he's like, what is it? I remember I had this little game I played to remember it. She's got freckles. She's marred by freckles. Marred for life by the freckles. Mary! Ah, her name's Mary! And as much as I'm sure he exaggerates a lot of this comic, like, that's the kind of thing that I'm sure really did run through his head. Like, just the these piece of shit ways that we act in our head, you know, or the fakeness of how we interact with people. You know, this guy just puts it right out on display, and it's fucking, it's excellent. I just can't, I'm shocked at how much I'm loving these comics. How much they have held up, how well, just how fucking great they are. So anyway, he's talking to this Mary girl. And, alright, I'll do my man voice and my girl voice. This is Joe Matt talking to Mary. Well, if you hate waitressing so much, why not do something else? Something you enjoy?
I don't know.
Hold on.
I don't know. It's just not that easy for me. I enjoy so many things, but I could never...
Hey, you can do anything you want in this goddamn world and make money at it. Trust me. Just follow a passion and everything will fall into place. Look at me, for Christ's sake. I draw comics about my pathetic life and people actually buy the damn things. There, what more proof do you need?
Yeah, but you've got talent. You can draw.
Bah, talent's overrated. It's just flashy technique. Anyone can do anything with enough goddamn practice. Seriously, there's nothing to it. The important thing is courage. You gotta be willing to risk it all. Take that leap of faith and don't look down. Just keep your overhead low and your dedication high, and you'll find the rewards far outweigh the sacrifices. Freedom and fulfillment beat slaving away at a well-paying, miserable job any day of the week.
You're so inspiring.
And then he uses this opportunity to try to kiss her, and she fucking turns him down. But, like, he's... I guess he did always kind of inspire me in that sense, that when I was a teenager, he did kind of show me that I didn't necessarily have to go to university. I didn't necessarily have to become a lawyer like my parents. I didn't have to do this stuff that wasn't really going to make me happy, that you can live way, way, way below what most people consider the normal poverty line and still be fine. But now that I'm his age reading these, they're so much better than they were then. And it's just, it's really hard for me to describe. Just, I would stop while reading these and just cackle at his horribleness, you know? At these shit things that he says to his girlfriend and these terrible things that he does. But it's one of those laughs that, you know, it's because it fucking cuts so very deep, you know? It hits so close to home. It is so, so fucking brave that he even put these things out. So, that's the comic book corner. I can't recommend Joe Matt enough. If you're in a comic store and you're just like lost and you don't even know what you're doing there or whatever, go try to find Joe Matt. Wherever they keep their fancy pants indie black and white comics, that's where you'll find him. His first one is called The Cartoon Diary of Joe Matt. Then The Poor Bastard is the collection I'm talking about right now. He did one called Fair Weather about when he was a kid. It was amusing, but not as good. And then this one I just picked up today is called Spent, and I am really fucking looking forward to diving into this motherfucker. So I'm going to play Mr. Bungle, the song The Girls of Porn, in tribute to Joe Matt, since so much of his comics are about his inability to stop masturbating and his fucking, just his weird obsession with girls and how his powerlessness over them and or under them. And the guy is just fucking fantastic. Apparently HBO was in talks to maybe make an animated series out of Peep Show back in 2005 with David Cohen. It fell apart. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure I could go through all my piles of comics and I could dig you out all kinds of weird, cool, fucking indie obscurities, but at the end of the day, Joe Matt is getting my big thumbs up. Of all of these comics, the ones that I thought for sure I was going to sell, and now that I've reread them, I absolutely cannot part with Joe Matt's Peep Show. 10,000 thumbs up.
Okay, all you puss-sucking motherfuckers out there, it's time to win a chance to butt-bang your daughter's tight virgin cherry ass. To call her number 666!
That's right, you gays. We got incestuous attitude. We got Sade and the sweetest taboo.
We got girls who eat your pee and poo. And guys who'd love to fuck your shoe. There's
and we got models with so much glee.
Since the skin lights from your crotch. Yeah!
Thank you.
Holy shit, I just finished Spent, the last Joe Matt collection. And his old autobiographical comics, you know, they would just deal with, like, the minutiae of his life. The first one was, like, you know, sometimes day to day. Then the next one was, like, you know, over the course of a few months. This fucking book skips years, man. It goes from, like, 1994 to 2000, no, to 98, and then to, like, 2002. And it's just the same shit. It's just him living in his fucking crappy house, making these huge porn collections that he dubs on his two VCRs, talking to his couple of friends, and just lamenting how shitty and pointless his life is. Like, by the end, he's 40. He's in his early 40s by 2002. It's fucking creepy, man. It's fucking creepy as fuck. It really went from being funny and insightful to scary shit. Then there's a part, like, toward the end, he takes his previous comics down off a shelf and explains why they suck shit, or, like, this thing I made up, this never really happened, here's where I was too lazy to do this the right way. Oh, god damn it, man. Holy fuck. Holy fuck. So I know, in real life, soon after that, he moved back to the States, and he's been there since then. And Lord knows what happened to him from there. I don't know. Hopefully he went to some porn addiction fucking group and, I don't know, man. I don't know. Did something. Holy fuck. Jesus, Joe Matt. I don't even know what to say. Jesus Christ.